Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here this week. And as I always say, another week. I hope everyone's doing well wherever you are. I'm actually on the East Coast right now, not in Hawaii, and being able to enjoy the fall and leaves changing and the beautiful colors, and it's just really amazing. And just like many of you in many parts of any areas, the weather's changing rapidly. One day it's cold, the next day it's warm. So, but I love it all. I think every day is so precious. And today we are going to spend the entire hour, we're not going to break it up, talking about mold. And I'm learning a lot about it, and I've been in this industry a long, long time. So we can always learn so much. And, you know, mold is part of Mother Nature, and it's been around forever, but people are having health hazards, and there's different things to look for when you're buying a property, whether you're buying residential, commercial, or you're representing, we have, you know, clients. It's something to look out for, and you would think that you could always see it, and we're going to learn that that's not always the case. Our guest today, I'm privileged to have Robert Hendrick. He actually owns RC Air and Mold Solutions Company. He has, oh my gosh, done, we're going to let him tell us, but it's over 1,600 plus inspections. He's definitely an expert in the field. He is nationally certified. There's so much we're going to learn today that I bet you didn't know and that you want to add to this, and we probably won't be able to get to it all in an hour, so you'll definitely want to move further on it as well. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Robert Hendrick. Hey there.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for taking the time to come in on our show today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure, and thank you for allowing me to be part of this. I really do appreciate it very much.
It's so interesting, you know, when you think about this. So tell us, before we get into the mold, which I don't think we'll be able to cover it all in an hour, but we'll get a lot of good gold nuggets in, tell us about you, like your history and what got you into doing this for a living.
Well, I started out, I was working for a company who rehabs bank-owned properties. And as you know, when a bank takes over a property, one of the first things they do is to turn off the electricity. If you have a basement with a sump pump, then now your sump pump is not functioning. Your basement floods, and in a matter of time, you have a house now filled with mold. And the company that I was working for wanted to start a mold division and hired me to come on and to learn the process of mold and its nature and what it does and how to get rid of it and things like that. So that's how I began my work with mold. This went on for about 2.5 years. And then, unfortunately, there were some changes within the company, and they folded, which left me out deciding, okay, now what am I going to do? Well, after thinking about it and talking to a few people, I was thinking, well, I was running the mold division of this company. I'm going to start my own company. So in late August of 2012, I began doing my certification work to acquire my own nationally certified mold inspector certification. And in May of 2013, I began doing my first inspections as a nationally certified mold inspector.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow, so now you've done, what, over 1,600 inspections? So you did many before that, but this is with your company.
Correct, right. Yeah, I had done 2.5 years working with the other company. But, yes, since May of 2013, I just went over, as of yesterday, over 1,600 inspections. And that's a lot of moldy houses. It really is.
That really is. And, you know, in our real estate world, I bet you it's you know, it blows my mind in the way, in the sense that, you know, our earth is our earth and we have property moving, so we're going to have settlement cracks and different issues with properties. It's so important for the buyer to check out mold, check out radon. Like, you'll see radon in the East Coast. We aren't getting radon in Hawaii. You know, California probably doesn't have much radon. So it depends on where you are. But it's funny. At what point is it the seller's responsibility to pay for all this, and what point is the buyer's? You know, you see a lot of transactions that where everybody wants to hold them together, probably canceling if the mold can't be fixed or it's too expensive. Do you see that a lot? Or
I do. I see it sometimes, not every time. And again, to answer your first question, is it a seller or buyer's responsibility? I would say I probably work 90% of the time with buyers, especially in today's age. Mold is becoming more and more of a prevalent issue and a costly issue. And let's just say a first-time home buyer, you know, they don't want to buy a house and to find out 6 months later they have a massive mold problem that's going to cost them $10,000 to repair. So they're more apt, you know, at this, you know, in the inspection stage to, you know, ask for a mold inspection just to make sure everything is fine and that there is no
mold. They should do it. It's just,
yes.
They should. Yeah. It's just a shame what happens in the transaction. Yeah. I mean, as
I
far as somebody thinking the seller should pay for it all. Yeah.
Right. And sometimes the seller will. Again, it depends, you know, on the situation, you know, what they agreed to do. But most of the time I do work for potential buyers for homes. And,
that makes sense.
So
I wonder if the sellers, if the insurance company would pick up some of that. I guess it depends on your insurance policy, whether you have sewage or water damage, or I would imagine it depends on what type of policy they have. Yeah.
It does, and I don't work directly with insurance companies, but I do hear through the remediation companies of, you know, some of the insurance claims. It depends a lot on the carrier. It depends if you add the rider for mold or even if they offer it. A lot of insurance companies don't even offer a mold as a rider. So it's something that you really have to look into, you know, down the road if, you know, when you do your homeowner's insurance to see if that's an option that you have to do that.
Makes a lot of sense. So tell us, what is mold? Because I'm hearing there's over 1,000 types, but apparently there's even more than that. So tell us what it actually is.
Well, mold is, like you said, part of our earth, part of our environment. Its design is to break down our natural debris that we have, especially, you know, things outdoors like leaves, grass, things like that, because if you didn't have mold, it would begin just to pile miles and miles high on our planet. So mold was created to break down these items. What happens, unfortunately, is it also works inside a home when you have water and food. Mold needs food and water to survive. So if you take away one or the other, you don't have a mold problem. But unfortunately, our houses are built with drywall, gypsum board. We have carpets. We have paneling. We have all kinds of food sources for mold. So what happens if you get a water event or even a high humidity situation, that is creates enough moisture for mold to begin to form and grow, and it thinks it's supposed to now has a job to do.
Was it years ago in the houses? I mean, it's always been prevalent, right? But do you think it's more and more now?
More and more now. Yes. And what happened back in the 70s during the energy crisis, and some of you out there may remember that, some may not. But during the energy crisis, houses and buildings began to be built tighter and tighter. A house initially was designed to breathe, to let out microscopic amounts of air in and out, to kind of give you fresh air and to exhaust the stale air. But unfortunately, by building the houses tighter, you don't have that effect anymore. So you've got these environments that can't breathe, for lack of a better word. And when mold begins to grow, it has no way to exhaust itself, so it just begins to multiply and grow and just keep going.
Wow. It's and mold goes so fast, doesn't it? It's
mold can begin to grow in as little as 24 to 48 hours under the right conditions. If you have a water event, a flooded basement, or a broken water heater, and you've got water, you've got to get the water dried or at least get the walls cut a minimum of 2 feet so you don't create a mold problem in your home. That's paramount.
Cut a minimum of 2 feet.
Went right. In other words, if you have walls in your basement, a finished basement, and you have a water event, and say it's only 2 inches up the wall, you cut. The standard is a 2 foot, what they call 2 foot flood cut, and the reason of that is drywall is 4 feet wide, so it makes it very easy to replace when you go back to rebuild your basement. That's why a 2 foot cut.
Okay, and then it could be growing up the wall, and you don't even know that it's growing up the wall. Oy.
Correct. A lot of times it's on the back side of the drywall, which you can't see.
Yeah,
so that's why it's so important to do that cut, because if you only cut what you think is there, you may leave a tremendous amount behind, and that would not be good.
No. No, I'm not laughing about it, but it's just unbelievable the amount of because you hear, I had a dealing with mold back in 2014, and I thought it was Vog in Hawaii. I didn't realize it was the mold making me sick, and I ended up with mold-induced asthma after 2.5 months. It was horrible, and I didn't have any other allergy problems. They did all the tests, and it was very bizarre how that can react.
And it can be very scary, too, because you don't know what's happening, and, and mold affects different people different ways. Each person responds differently to mold. One person might be able to stay in a room that's got black mold growing 3 feet up the wall, watching TV and having dinner. Whereas someone like you could walk into a room where there's no visible growth, but just the levels are so to the point where you are hypersensitive to the mold. And you're like, I've got to get out of here. I can't stay.
And I wasn't that way before that happened. Now, even in a movie theater, there's times, I know my son took me to the movies on my birthday last year, and I started coughing, choking, when you start coughing and your throat's tickling all of a sudden for no reason, you're like, wait a minute, I don't even have a cold. What's going on here? And that coughing and I had to walk out because I guess something in there was musty, moldy, whatever, in the movie theater, and I didn't know it. It was... but that's how sensitive I am now, where I wasn't before.
Right.
So,
What happens, your body doesn't have the immunity like it had before, so even small amounts of elevated mold spores can trigger those reactions to where you have to get out of that area. So
Well, tell me about, because I had asked you briefly when we were talking, and you said, oh, there's way more. You said there could be 200,000 to 300,000. Many of us think we see black mold or different. We don't see a lot of mold.
Right.
And you had mentioned, over 1,000 different types of mold, and I'd asked, and then you said, oh, no, it could be over 300,000. That, blows my mind, although we do have many, many species on our Earth, which I have to keep, to me, I'm always reminding myself, because it's such a beautiful Earth, and we don't always... Nature is amazing. So tell us about that. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. In the United States alone, they have classified about 1,000 different species of mold that they have recognized when they look at it under a microscope. There are roughly 100,000 to 200,000 types of mold that they have not even classified. They recognize it as mold, but they don't have a name for it. So a lot of times when we get an inspection report back from the laboratory, it'll actually have a line item that says unidentifiable spores. So they know it's a mold, but they don't know what classification it is. Mold does come in many, many different shapes and colors. Like you said, most people think, oh, it's, you know, it's, I'm looking for black. I'm always looking for black mold. Well, black mold is one of the most dangerous and most toxic. The scientific name for that is called Stachybotrys. Stachybotrys is an indoor mold that does not grow outdoors, so it's not a natural type of mold that you find outside in everyday environments. And the way Stachybotrys slash black mold grows is with a pretty significant water intrusion event. It's what they call a hydrophilic mold. It needs a lot of water to grow and survive. But there's others like Aspergillus penicillium, which is an outdoor and indoor mold both. You'll find it in every home that you test in moderate levels. And that can be gray, white, yellowish. I've seen it in many, many different colors. So just because you don't see, just because you don't see black doesn't mean that you don't have a mold problem. So, I mean, it could be something that you look at, so, oh, that looked like dust to me, and it's actually, you know, a significant amount of visible mold growth.
Wow, yellow and, wow.
Yep, I've seen it bright yellow.
Is it possible to not see it at all?
Like
it's there and you don't really see it, it's more of a, I don't mean behind the wall, but I mean like it's something like dusty or something and you just don't see it,
Yep, I've had, when we go in do our inspections, there are certain ways to look for mold, and we use pretty bright lights for one of our, you know, one of our tools. And when you look for mold, you never want to look for it straight on with a light. You always have to look at it at an angle because of that coloration issue. If you've got a white mold growing on a white wall and you shine a white light on it, it's going to wash it out. You're not going to be able to see it. So when we walk up to a wall, we kind of put the light at a perfect angle looking down the wall and looking for that now visible growth that will cast an actual small shadow because it's actually growing on the wall. So that's one of our techniques we use when we look for mold, because a lot of people are like, oh, I thought that was just dust. And I'm like, nope, that's mold. And it's very defining because it grows in a circular-like pattern, or what I call blotchy. So if you see that on furniture, on a wall, whatever color it is, that's mold. That would not be a dust issue.
Okay. So you said black mold, is that the most dangerous, or is it more, is it like, there, it depends, that's the most toxic, or?
It is the most toxic. Well, no, it is the most toxic, but I do have to reiterate, all molds can be harmful depending on the person's immune system and the levels of mold spores that are present. So people are like, oh, it's not dangerous, it's not black mold. Well, that is completely untrue. You know, Aspergillus penicillium can be extremely harmful. Normal ranges, mold spores are measured in cubic meters of air. So every cubic meter of air is going to have X number of mold spores. So that's how the lab equates it to us. That's how they report back to us when they give us our results. So when you hear that there's, you know, 500 spores, that's pretty much normal for an Aspergillus penicillium count. And again, that's 500.
Wait a minute, 500 spores.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Okay.
And
okay.
Well, you have to remember, you can fit 250,000 spores on the head of a pin. That's how microscopic mold spores are. Yeah.
Oh,
250,000. So
wow.
When you see your 500, oh, that doesn't sound like a lot, and it isn't. It really isn't. But getting back to the original thought, if Aspergillus, let's say, is 100,000 per cubic meter, when it's supposed to be 500, that would be just as potentially dangerous as, you know, lower amounts of the black toxic mold, Stachybotrys. So, again, you can't just put black mold in a category and say, oh, it's, you know, it's not black mold, so it's not dangerous. That is just completely untrue.
It just goes in through your skin, through your lungs, you breathe it in, touch it?
Yep, all the above. Breathing is probably one of the most ways that people inhale the mold spores, you know, because you're in an area, you're in a room, they're floating in the air. But, yes, by touching it, getting it on your fingers or on your skin, it can enter your body that way as well. That's not as common I would say the most common way is, you know, breathing the spores in on a continual basis.
So if the basement's musty, because, I mean, in all these years with houses, you know, we go into a musty house, we think, well, there's got to be water somewhere, right? I mean, it's just kind of a natural, you know, oh, there must be water. We have to check the grading. Was there a flood? Did anything come in?
Right.
What's going on?
Right.
Is that a good sign of mold, or it could be other things too?
Well, the musty smell that you smell when you walk into a basement, as we know, basements always have a certain little, what I call, earthy smell. You know, because it's
mm-hmm.
underground. Now, when you
right.
walk into a basement and you get that strong, musty, knockdown odor, those are called mycotoxins. That is an off-gas that mold produces when it's growing. So you're not actually breathing the spore, but the smell you're smelling is a gas that's being emitted from the mold. So if you walk into a home or basement and you smell that very, very strong, I would highly recommend do not go in that basement without proper breathing equipment. Because even, again, if you're susceptible to it and you go down there and you're showing a home and you're walking around the basement for 20, 30 minutes breathing that, it could possibly make you sick. Or if you see it growing once you walk down there.
But that mycotoxin, then that's pretty much going to be a mold problem. You know, they need to get somebody out to test it for mold, right? Pretty much.
Correct. Yeah. If you smell that strong, musty presence, yeah, that would be a huge trigger to say, hey, we need to get a mold inspection taking place here before we move forward. Yeah.
Wow. It's really, it's now, so the mold, though, are you seeing it cause lung damage, brain damage, all kinds of, what type of problems are you, I mean, you, since you're an expert at it, you pretty much hear about or see?
Well, the most thing I've heard, the primary thing is respiratory. That's usually what triggers people to call us. They'll say, you know, when I come into my house, when I go to work, I feel great. When I come home in the evening, by morning, I've got a stuffy nose, I've got a runny nose, I'm coughing, my chest hurts. That's usually the trigger for when people decide to say, hey, let's get this house tested for mold. A lot of times when people go on vacation and after 2 days into their vacation, they're like, wow, I feel really good. And then they, you know, a week out and they come home. And within 3 days being back home, they start to feel sluggish and run down and having that breathing issues again. So that's also one way that we get a lot of calls. People notice that. The other conditions, there are very serious conditions that I've read about. I've never actually seen them.
Right.
But during
right.
my reading and learning process, yes, I've, you know, severe cases would be hair loss and, you know, bleeding. I mean, but that is extreme, extreme cases. You know, on the average, most of the time, it's a respiratory issue that usually triggers a call or someone to say, hey, let's find out what's going on.
Mm.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, but it can be dangerous.
Yeah, but
it can be very dangerous.
Yeah, it's really. Does the EPA have regulations in regard to the levels?
They do not. That's one thing that they do not regulate, and two of the biggest reasons are it changes daily. Because when you open your front door, you let mold spores in. So if there was a regulatory level and outside that day, you know, the levels are high and you test the house that day and it's high, then you would be like, oh, my gosh, we got a mold problem. Secondly, each person responds differently. So one level to you could be totally a different level to someone else. And
wait, the minimum level would be – there's no, like, what a regular, there's not really, like, a normal level, right? Or a level that says it's okay to have this much mold? I mean, is that,
not federal. There are some industry guidelines we go by, like I said earlier.
Okay.
Aspergillus penicillium, we like to see around 400 to 600 spores per cubic meter, depending on what's going outside. That's okay, depending on what's going on outside. Now, let's say outside that day when we do our control sample or our base sample, it's 1,100 outside and it's 800 in your house. That's okay because you've been in and out of your house a couple times during the day. You've let those mold spores in, so that's okay. But if it's 1,100 outside and 11,000 in your house, then we have a problem.
Wow.
So that's
oh my
why
gosh.
It's
what?
So
Yeah.
It's so important to take that outdoor sample because that helps us understand what's going on inside your home.
So that's what you called the control sample?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, it's an outdoor. Yeah, outdoor control or base sample. Because when you walk outside your house to go to work or go outside to play in the yard with your kids, you're breathing mold all day long. So the key is we want to, but you don't live outside. You live inside. So the key
but
is.
But a lot of people like to live outside. No, I mean, a lot of people like to be, like I'm an outdoors person. And for example, in Hawaii, many people spend time outside than inside, even though, of course, you sleep inside and cook and do things inside. But so is it, it's that, but it's not, the level's probably not
that could
too
be
bad
contained
you're
in a smaller area. Right, right.
It's
you
not,
think about it. You
right.
get into a house that has
and
a mold problem. It's closed.
Right.
You've got no way for the wind to disperse it. You've got nothing to move it.
So that's
your HVAC
the issue
system.
Mainly.
Correct,
yeah.
correct. Right. And most allergies are mold-related that I've read. Again, I'm not an MD, but from what I've read through periodicals and things like that, most allergies are mold-related, not pollen-related. And so especially in the fall, there's a particular type of mold that spikes in the fall called basidiospores. And it usually spikes because of the falling leaves that begin to decay. And so, boom, those levels go up exponentially because of, you know, all the dead leaves falling.
Wow. So are there like little teeny mold? It's actually, they're actually little live little things basically because they're growing, right?
Yep.
They need
mold
to eat.
Mold is a living thing. Yep. Mold is a living thing.
You just want to think of it as something different, you know? Wow, that's amazing.
One of the ways that we test, and I do not recommend this, don't do this at home, is we will take our hand with a glove and wipe a spot, and if it smears rather than does not come off, it's active mold because it's a living thing. A lot of times people will mistake, you know, stains for mold or mold for stains, and that's one of the ways we will do a test. It's a physical test.
So you take the glove and just wipe it. Yeah.
Right. And it smears, leaves a gooey smear mark. It is active, viable mold. It's alive. If you wipe an area where mold has been and you see a stain and you wipe it and nothing comes off, it's a stain. Okay. It's inactive. It's dormant. Doesn't mean it's dead. It just goes dormant. You still have to treat it as active mold because if you get a water event or a high humidity event, that mold could reactivate and begin to grow again. So that's why it's so important when you do mold remediation, you remove it. You completely remove any sign of it to prevent it from coming back, whether it's active or dormant.
How much does an inspection cost approximately for people in general? I know it varies probably from regions and et cetera, but is that usually? Tell about.
Normally it runs about $350 for an inspection. That would include one of your indoor air samples and, of course, your outdoor control sample. If there is a problem that we find, that includes the protocol that would be needed for a client to give to a remediation company of their choice. So all that would be inclusive of that cost for the inspection. And
how many spots do you usually test? Is it because you said one outside, one inside is included, but how many spots would you typically, depending on what the issue is?
Depending on what the issue, it's a good point. Depending on the issue, let's just say if we go into a basement, and normally that's where I'd say 75% of your mold issues are in a basement. And you walk down there, and there's mold growing 3 or 4 feet up the wall in several places. Yes, we know it's growing, but we need to know what the spore count is because you have to eradicate not only the visible mold, but you have to eradicate the spores as well. So we would do an air sample in there, and then we would do a sample on the level above at minimum to make sure that the mold spores are not migrating into that next level because they are so light and airy. Just walking up and down the stairs repeatedly, you can pull mold spores into another level of your home. Now, to add to that, if the HVAC system is in your basement that supplies your whole house and it is a severe situation, then we recommend doing a sample at least on every level of the home to make sure it's not flowing through the ductwork.
Well, you know, when they clean ductwork, which I know I need to do mine, when they clean ductwork, that jogs my memory. I need to make a note and remind myself to do that to one of my places, so, because I haven't for a long time. When they do that ductwork cleaning, is that going to bring it mess? Is that just going to be actually contained probably to the ductwork, right? It's not going to spread anything around if there is anything?
Well,
it's probably a good idea to do, I would think, too. I asked a couple questions.
Yeah, if you know you have a known mold problem and you need your ducts cleaned, you need to have someone who is experienced in duct cleaning with mold remediation. It's a separate process, yes, other than just a standard duct cleaning service, because they've got to take certain precautions and they use certain agents to clean the ducts with to make sure that they've, again, eradicated the spores in the ductwork system. So make sure that, you know, if you need that, and a lot of times in a situation where the basement is severe and the HVAC system is down there, we automatically suggest, you know, hey, you should get your ductwork cleaned as a precaution.
And if they don't know of anything, because they don't think there's a problem, right, and you're getting your ductwork done, it just really doesn't – it's just a good idea probably since to clean your ductwork actually also, I mean, on an ongoing basis, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. It reduces the dust and build up inside there. Changing your filter because, you know, it's trapping all that stuff that's flowing through the air. And so you want to keep that clean as well. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. So what should the humidity level be in a basement?
What I suggest for a basement is around 35 to 40% humidity. Normal range is 35 to 55 for a home. That's considered acceptable. But in my professional opinion, in a basement, it needs to be as dry as possible. Now, you don't want it 15% because that's not good either. So I say around 35 to 40%. Well, this is something we learned during our training as well. When your humidity levels get to a certain point, now what happens, the natural mucous membranes in your body begin to dry out, which now will make you more susceptible to germs, molds, things like that, because your natural defense system is not there. I've actually done mold inspections in people's homes where they're like, I'm coughing, I'm dry, I wake up with nosebleeds, and they instantly think, oh, well, I've got a mold problem. We go in, do the inspection, the levels come back fine. We do a humidity reading, and I think one of the lowest I found in a home was 15%. Now, the Sahara Desert is only 25%. So this is 15%.
That's something to think about. Yeah,
right.
You know, I know in the wintertime, many people get nosebleeds, and then you find out they just need to put a humidifier in there or put a bowl of water in, or, you know, I mean, just that makes total sense. That makes
a
lot of sense.
Now,
so.
Speaking of humidifiers for HVAC systems, you have to be very, very careful with those. Because what happens, yes, they're a great tool in the wintertime. They provide moisture that's needed in the home because it's so dry outside. But a lot of times people forget to turn them off in the spring and summer. So what happens if they forget to turn them off, now you're creating more humidity in a humid summer, and boom, you've got mold growing all throughout your ducts in a matter of no time. So if you install a
That makes sense.
If you do install a humidifier on your HVAC system, please make sure that you monitor it, and as soon as the weather begins to warm a little bit in March or April here on the East Coast, you know, turn that thing off and make sure it stays off until late in the fall.
These are wonderful tips to give to a new home buyer or any buyer, any seller buyer, because I wouldn't have thought the humidifier, turning it off in the spring and the summer, I could see that being missed completely.
Yep. You don't out of sight, out of mind kind of thing, you know. You get busy,
exactly.
It's nice out, and you just naturally flip on your air conditioning, which now is cool air, and now you're adding humidity to that. Next thing, boom, you've got mold growing all throughout your ductwork. So, yeah, all these little things that you don't think about when it comes to mold. You know, storing items in a closet. I'll give you another example, Natalie. Storing items in a closet, packing it full, especially like in a basement, you're not
right.
allowing any air movement around those items. And again, natural mold, you've got always got some sort of mold spores in your home. And now you've got air trapped and you've got high humidity. And I've done many inspections where I go into an area and this closet is packed full. You pull everything out and there's mold growing all over the backside of the walls from where the belongings were. Because
there's no air.
There's no air movement. There's no way
sense.
to keep it somewhat dry or moving it. And we see this all the time in where people store things, and especially in basements.
Right.
Where they just put it in, you know, and sometimes you have no choice, but try to at least leave some gaps around, you know, the area where you're storing your personal belongings.
That makes complete sense. Wow. Yeah, so if you're sneezing, coughing, you're constantly having a cold, it's like, wait a minute.
Right.
It may be, yeah. And then you're constantly knocking your immune system down as well because the sneezing,
correct.
You know,
you're
it's a vicious cycle. You know, it amazes me, but then now it makes complete sense when you said there's no way to really, I don't want to say regulate, but to detect, and the spores can change rapidly because, like with paint, with lead paint, that was a huge deal. Anything built before 1978 in the U.S., is presumed to have lead paint in it, right? And and now, you know, they have the certifications, and anyone doing remediation on lead paint has to be certified, et cetera, et cetera. There's all these different regs and EPAs involved, I would think, just like EPAs involved in radon. I'm very surprised to hear that they're not in mold, which makes sense from what you're saying, though.
Well, there are certain
Mother Nature's way more than a step ahead here, huh?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There are certain regulation or certain certifications that mold remediation companies should have. It's called IICRC. It stands for Institute of Inspection Cleaning Restoration Certification.
Can you say it one more time?
IICRC.
Okay.
What that is, and I call it the Bible, for lack of a better word, of mold remediation. It is a guideline that has been compiled by hundreds of professionals over the years for the mold remediation techniques that work successfully. So what I go by when I do my testing, there's three conditions. It's condition 1, 2, and 3 that we go by. Condition 1, I'm trying to pull it up here real quick, and I can tell you what they are. Condition 1 is an indoor environment that may have settled spores, fungal fragments, or traces of actual growth whose identity, location, and quantity are reflective of a normal fungal ecology for a similar indoor environment. So that's called a condition 1 environment. So if I come into your home and we do a test and everything comes back normal, it's considered a condition 1. Now, when you go into a basement and it's growing and you have elevated mold spores, that's a condition 3 environment. It's 1, 2, or 3. So when a remediation company comes in, they're coming into a condition 3 environment. What they want to achieve when we come back for a post-test or a post-remediation verification is they're trying to achieve a condition 1 environment. So that's another important factor to think about when you're doing mold remediation. One, the company that you want to hire, I can't stress enough that they would be IICRC certified.
That's really important. Can you do the remediation, or is that a conflict?
Oh, no, that is a total conflict of interest. We are completely independent, third party, strictly mold inspection and testing, because we're there to give you the facts, good or bad.
Right.
I'm not saying that other companies would do that, but if you're a mold remediation company whose livelihood is based on removing mold, you know, you need mold to survive. So Unfortunately,
right,
sometimes.
Right, but I mean, so it's really not a good, right, but you, yeah, it's not a good idea. If somebody, if there is a company that tests and remediates, that's not the best we would advise, right? Everybody would advise that
I would advise, I mean, when you take a test, yeah. Did the teacher let you grade your test? No.
Well, you know, because termite companies will do termite repairs once when they check, you know. But it could be a conflict as well, although you really need to kind of know who you're dealing with. But that makes complete sense to keep it separate.
Most of the remediation companies I work with, and I work with multi-million dollar remediation companies, they will not test, pre-test or post-test. They just won't do it. They do not want to give any appearance of, you know, we're trying to find mold, we're trying to do something that's not there, and they will say, you need to call RC Air Mold Solutions. Let them find out what's going on first, and then we give that report to the homeowner, not to the remediation company, because, you know, it's up to them to choose who they want to use. But, again, I can't stress enough to make sure that they are. Yeah, they are IICRC certified. Right.
Now, we're talking to Robert Hendrick with RC Air and Mold Solutions. Why don't you give your contact information now? It's a good time to give people your information. People know, when they listen to this, they can also contact us, Realty Universal Radio, or go to realtyuniversal.com, and so we would forward them to you, but I always want to have your information as well.
Sure. You can reach us a number of ways. We've got a full working website. That's RC Air and AND, moldsolutions.com. Our toll-free number is 855-620-6653, and that will reach us direct. We're on Facebook. You can read more about us on Facebook as well. And then via email, we have an info sign-in page on our website that you can request more information.
Perfect. Excellent. So now we were going into some of it with remediation. What about if somebody wants to paint over it or use Clorox or, you know, I mean, will it clear it?
How much time do we have to talk about bleach?
Wow.
Well, let's go with bleach.
It's not good, huh? Because people do that all the time, I think. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Natalie, I hear that so many times. I'm just going to get some bleach water and clean the mold. Well, let's go back to our basic mold needs food and water to survive. Problem that you don't ever want to use bleach on poor surface is this. Bleach is 90% water, 10% chlorine. The ionic structure, and again, I'm not a chemist by no means. This is just through my studies. The ionic structure of chlorine prevents it from soaking into porous material. So what happens is, let's say you have a spot of mold growing on your wall, and you're like, I'm going to get the bleach, put on some gloves, put on a mask, wipe it down. Okay, you physically, yes, you will physically remove what you see, but the water that's in the bleach that you've just applied to that area is now saturating the microscopic roots of the mold that are still left behind.
Wow.
And within a few days to a week, all of a sudden you walk by that wall again and you see this spot of black mold growing again. You're like, I just cleaned it. So you get the bleach water out and you wipe it again. And it just keeps repeating. It's like throwing gas on a fire. It's that critical. I have to go back to professional remediation. If you've got that issue going on, it physically has to be removed. You just can't clean it. Because it's always going to be there. It's going to, you know, go dormant, or you're continually feeding it with the water. And
that's
so
funny, because bleach,
why,
you think of it, you said it's not ionic. Because of its ionic structure, it won't absorb and soak into that and clean it off well. It's amazing because bleach isn't good for our lungs. I used to clean with it years ago, and I don't do that now, like to that extent, you know, because it was really – it's good to – you know, it really seems to make a house seem clean, you know? I mean, it really strips out
absolutely.
Everything.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Now,
and the germs, so it doesn't, it's funny, it doesn't take mold out, huh? Wow.
Nope, not on porous material. Now, let's just say you've got some mold growth on a PVC pipe in your basement.
Okay.
First of all, the mold actually will not grow on plastic. It's not a food source. So what happens is the mold begins to grow on the microscopic dust and debris that falls on that PVC.
Oh, so it's laying on top of it. Got it.
It's laying on top of it. Now, if you want to use bleach in that application, it will work because there's nothing for it where to soak in. That chemical will now will mix and remove anything left residue on that non-porous surface. Same with
that
glass.
Makes sense.
Mold doesn't grow on glass, but it will grow on the microscopic dust and debris that's on the glass itself. Because I've actually seen mold growing on glass, and I'm like, wow. I mean, it has to be pretty dusty and a lot of stuff left behind for it to actually stick to and grow on that material.
What about drywall? So it grows on drywall, and that's not something you can wipe off with bleach either then, right?
Not at all. Drywall, paneling, okay. Any kind of a floor molding, wallpaper, anything that's porous, that can soak into, something can soak into, you never, never want to use bleach. Again, you would want to call a professional first to see what's going on, or have an inspection first to see how bad it is, because sometimes what you see is only the tip of the iceberg. You could have a spot on your wall that's say 12 inches by 8 inches, but behind your wall it could be 3 feet up the back side, and now it's actually just coming through the front side. So that's why it's so critical to have a professional.
And never cover it up. Don't cover mold up. I just want to say, people to listening, because, we've seen situations where, say, somebody finished their basement and then something happens and they need to tear the ceiling down and there's all this mold that definitely would have been from before, So it could be where they see black and they just think, well, I'm just going to, build the basement. Maybe it, unintentionally, it can sound like somebody's hiding something, but there's a lot of things that happen that are unintentional and can get people in a lot of trouble. And, our health is our most important asset we have. But I still giggle about how we live on Earth and we have our gravity and everything's moving. And I just giggle in the sense of what everybody expects to find in homes, when I see little cracks you're like, that's kind of typical. Of course, everything has to be checked out, but there's just so much that happens. Yeah.
Well, now you also mentioned painting over mold.
Right.
That again is a not an effective way to get rid of, quote unquote, get rid of the mold. What happens? And there are things out there in the market that says, this is mold preventing paint. Well, nothing is mold preventing. It's mold inhibiting, but it's not mold preventing. And even what they have, the green drywall out there, it's an inhibitor. It's not a preventer. If you get the right circumstances.
So talk about the green wall. They talk about putting that in your showers, when you're going to put it, when you're going to, in your shower wall, right? Because it's more of a waterproof situation, just like we do with wood. You want treated wood, right? And that doesn't. That's going to do what? Slow it down, but not really eliminate it.
Well, it's going to keep it under normal conditions. It's going to keep it from growing. But let's just say you have a crack in a tile in your shower and the water's seeping in there. It's not going to prevent mold from growing on it. Under normal conditions, it does enhance the effect of keeping mold from growing under normal everyday conditions. You just have to realize that, like you just said, there's cracks and crevices all the time, and water will seek its own level, and it'll find a way to get in. I've actually went into bathroom inspections and showers and seen mushrooms growing out between the grout and the bathroom shower.
Oh, my goodness. Right. No, I hear you, yeah. Right,
so,
exactly. No, I hear you.
You think about, that's just a mushroom, but that is a smaller problem or smaller issue of a bigger problem that's behind the wall. If you've got a mushroom growing out of your shower,
you've got some healthy
problem.
Water back there and some growth.
Right. Again,
my goodness.
Yeah. Again, the green board, it helps under normal everyday conditions. Absolutely. I would highly recommend if you're building a basement or remodeling or whatever. Absolutely, use the green board under normal conditions. It'll keep your
basement. Instead of regular, even in a basement, because I would think in a bathroom, just using it even for the drywall on the walls.
Bathroom. Yeah, absolutely. But I'm thinking, again, I see more basements than I do bathrooms, and
And you think it's a good idea because it's going to deter some of the. It's going to help. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's going to help inhibit it. Again, nothing is preventative, in my opinion, to prevent mold under the right conditions with water and humidity and things like that.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
That's just amazing.
But it will.
Well, I told you an hour was going to go by fast, and we're almost to the end, believe it or not. It flies by. I want to have you give us what you want to tell the audience as your gold nuggets. But before I do that, I mean, you've been giving us so many good nuggets. I mean, it's just too much to be able to. 1 hour is not enough. You could do a 3-day seminar on this. I know you could. It's like, but I want to ask you though. So anybody listening now is probably thinking, oh my gosh, I've been sneezing for a while. I've had a cold for a while. Oh my God, wait a minute. Oh, I didn't think I had anything. I better go home and check this out. So if say they do and they call you or get in touch and find out who to go to if they're across the country or however and get this tested and find out there is mold, is there an average cost? Because it can be extremely expensive, you know, if they just have a little bit of mold in their basement versus, you know, well, if it's major, I think most people listening would have already known, right? But is there an average kind of cost? I had a property for the VFW. It was a sin. They brought me in to sell one of their posts, because I was doing it with a few of them, and I couldn't believe the company that had it listed before me literally did not waterproof it, did not winterize it. It was a sin. The whole place had such mold you could barely walk in it everywhere. Ceilings, like,
wow.
I mean, it was just a sin to have that happen, but it did. And that's an obvious situation. But the little situations, is there an average cost that
For the remediation, you mean?
To
get rid of it? An average, no, because each situation is unique and different. There's so many factors to take into consideration when doing a mold remediation project. The amount of visible mold present, the levels of mold spores in the air, the amount of content in your area, the type of, if you have carpet opposed to hardwood, or it's an unfinished basement with a concrete floor. So all those factors are taken into consideration when the remediation company does their pricing for the mold remediation work. So there's
okay.
really not, unfortunately, there's just not an average. So if you have high levels of mold spores and you have carpet in your basement, unfortunately, carpet and padding has to go. It's impossible to clean that amount of many mold spores out of something like a fabric or something like
right.
that. Yes.
So I think everybody should call their insurance company and see if they have a rider or can get a rider.
It would be a good idea, in my opinion. I've seen so many times where people just have to flip out a credit card because they have no other option. And many might not have it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And exactly.
Just, you know, interesting.
So... very interesting. It's I've learned so much more about mold in my 7 years so far, other than just it's black. It goes much, much deeper than that. And go ahead.
No, I'm just looking at this. There's like over 300,000 literally all over the world when you're looking at what you – I that blows my mind, but it makes sense. And over 1,000 figured out here in the U.S., it's amazing.
But if you suspect or even think or you've had a water event, because what happens a lot of times, and I'll try to wrap it up with this, if you have a water event in, say, a basement, and you think, oh, well, I've got it dry and everything's good, you don't know where that water has seeped to. You don't know what it's ran under. And, again, mold can begin to grow in as little as 24 to 48 hours. So just if you have had a water event or something like that, takes a precaution. I know people don't like to spend money. I get it. But if you catch it early, Natalie, it saves you a lot of money down the road because it hasn't had time to manifest and grow. So if you catch it early, you could reduce remediation costs significantly. So, you know, it's always better to be, you know, preventative, be proactive instead of reactive.
Right, even if somebody's had plumbing leaks or any other type of leaks
yep.
and then things were repaired,
yep.
you may want to have somebody look behind for that.
Right, the wall. Yep, absolutely.
I've learned a lot. This has been very, very educational. I definitely would love to have you back. We'll definitely be doing business.
Well, thank you.
It's really So when you do, I know this, and when you do, the equipment actually tests, and you can tell people right on the spot, yes, you have this, but then there's parts of it, some tests that have to be sent away to the lab, right? Does it work both ways?
Yes,
Okay.
Visually, I can usually bring a homeowner down or client and say, okay, here's what we got going on visually. The air samples that we take have to be sent to an accredited laboratory for evaluation. They will then put it under microscope, break it down by each individual species that was found and by that concentration level, like I said earlier, per cubic meter. And that normally we have the results back in 2 or 3 days after we do the testing. And then once we have all that information, then we compile a report and then give you our findings, our recommendations, the levels, and then proceed from there. So that's normally the standard process.
Now, somebody has a – I'm just thinking because I can think so many different situations and being in the business for so long. What if somebody's had a plumbing repair done and they're not sure if there could – and there was definitely water leaking behind, and then all that's been fixed, drywall's been put back up. How would you test that without ripping out the wall? Would you you'd have to basically – rip it out, right?
Yeah, we would do an ambient air sample first. In other words, take a sample in the affected area just to see what's going on. And then we have the capability to drill a small 3-inch diameter hole, a nice perfect little round hole into a wall cavity, slide a cartridge cassette in there via air tube, and pull a sample from behind a wall.
Like when you have those access panels on the walls, like for plumbing? You have access panels. You could stick it through there, pretty much, right?
Yep, absolutely.
That would give you an idea.
Right.
Okay.
Because that way you could see how it compares to what the ambient air is in the area as well as what's going on behind the walls. So if there was something that was missed during that repair project and that then that inside wall level comes back elevated, but the in-room is fine, then you know that there's still a problem lurking back behind there. Absolutely.
Right.
So
excellent information. So.
Well, thank you.
There's ways to fix this. There's ways to do it and to stay healthy and just that's excellent information. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, if you suspect it or think about it, your health is not worth the cost of an inspection, in my opinion. Just find out for sure. Find out for sure, because again, I can't stress enough, if you catch it early before it's had time to, and mold, sometimes it'll be growing and all of a sudden sometimes people walk into basements like, oh my gosh, where did this come from? It's been growing for months or weeks or months, but you don't see it because it grows microscopically at first and then all of a sudden it begins to appear. And what you see appearing is called colonies. Those are mold colonies. And those colonies are spewing spores into the air by the tens of thousands at that point. And if you would have had a test, initially and had small, low elevated levels, then the cleaning process or remediation would have been a lot less expensive than what you'd be facing now.
You're sharing your homes with mold and bugs.
Right.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
There's always going to be some spores in your air. It's just part of life, part of nature. The key is you want to make sure those spores are not elevated above safe and normal levels, and there's nothing extremely toxic going on in that air sample. So, it's very interesting process to do all this.
Well, I thank you so much for coming on, and we will definitely have you back and be in touch. And I think you're going to be doing quite a lot of testing, huh? You're in one industry that's not going to slow down.
Nope. As long as I keep building houses, and I'll have job security.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.